Hello everyone, how are you doing? If you're new here, I'm Dr. Sheen, an Oxford and Cambridge graduate, a tech entrepreneur and business coach.
And welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm Sheen, your host, and today we're joined by my wonderful friend Shweta. So Shweta is Shweta Jory Scott. She's private on Instagram, so don't even bother. So Shweta is a Yale grad, which I don't know why anyone would go there, but she has also worked in fintech, worked at Amazon, and is now in the process of launching her own business. Mm-hmm. Hi, Shweta. How are you?
Hi, Sheen. It's nice to be here.
This is so formal. I love it. So this is going to be a very different episode to the rest because we've known each other. We're very close to each other. So feel free to ask me any questions. This will be very unfiltered.
Okay, good.
For you as well. How do you feel about that?
I am ready. Mm. I'm ready with my questions for you.
Let's go. But no, you don't start.
Okay.
Please.
Fine.
Okay. Do you want to tell them how we know each other?
We met through Dubai, which is a founder / investor social club in Dubai. And we became very close friends very fast.
Yes.
I think from the first day.
It was at your barbecue, actually.
Alex
hosted a barbecue.
Yeah.
And we actually met at the end of the barbecue.
And then spent the rest of the time just talking. And then people had to pry us away from each other.
So we kind of like skipped the small talk part and we just became friends.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
How do you find making friends in your 30s?
I wouldn't say that I found it to be easy at any point in my life because I'm such a lovely person.
She is.
Well, I think I'm quite an introvert, and I have fewer deeper friendships than, you know, a large number of more superficial ones. But I think for me, I will like identify somebody who's like me, like I did with you, and then just go really deep, really fast.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. So, I mean, this is just me talking now, but I need to share some of my gems. But I was reading this thing the other day, which said that there are kind of like three different types of relationships and friendships that you encounter and compare them to three doors.
Okay.
So the first one is a door that is very easy to open. As soon as you try to open, you get in and you love what you see on the other side. And it feels like you're at ease. It happened very, very smoothly. And this is what happened with us, right? Automatically clicked. And then the second door is one that you have been trying to open and it just won't budge. And you keep trying. It's really hard, right? And this is usually when you're trying to force a connection and it's not happening. And then there's the third one, which is a revolving door. So you keep going in and out.
Okay.
And you feel like you're making progress, but you're going back to where you started every time. So this is, again, not something that it might just be a relationship for a short period of time, but not necessarily one that you want to, you don't want to keep going around.
Right.
So that's why it's like to identify the right person, whether it's in a relationship, a partnership or a friendship, it has to be easy and it has to feel like it's an automatic click.
Yeah. I think for me, the good friendships are always the ones where even if you don't see each other for a while, the minute you do, it's like you pick up where you left off.
Right. Yeah. It always feel like you're back right where you started. All right. Let's talk about your journey now.
My journey.
So you went to Yale.
I did. I grew up in Dubai and I went to DA and went to Yale after that.
So was US always the choice for you?
I think so. Okay. I think because I was in an American high school, like I just started thinking about the US and I didn't know what I wanted to study. And I think in the UK, when you go, you just, you kind of choose your,
you have to
your
choose
major
before you
immediately,
go,
right? And I was not ready to make that choice because I was very much undecided. So I wanted to go to the US because I liked the flexibility that the programs gave you. And Yale was amazing. I made a lot of great friends. My classes were great. My professors were great. And after graduating, I joined the fintech industry, and I was in finance and technology for about 5 years mm-hmm. or 4 years.
Wait, what did you study at Yale?
I studied political science with a major in international conflict resolution.
Oof. That's amazing.
Yeah, that was like my specialization. And I took a lot of classes on like the Middle East and policy. And I wanted to work at the UN. And that was like my dream. And then at some point that dream just changed.
Changed to fintech. How did that happen?
It happened a lot out of necessity, yeah. right? Because I wanted to, as always, I wanted to stay in the US, and the only way to stay in the US was to get sponsored for a visa.
Yes.
And the kind of bigger companies in tech and finance sponsor your visas. So I looked for companies that could sponsor my visa. Mm-hmm. I found a kind of medium-sized fintech company that was based in New York that was willing to sponsor my visa. And that was, you know, a great place for me to start my career. So that was kind of why the UN went out the window.
Out of the window. But this is so fascinating to me because I was the same as you when I was at uni. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something a bit more meaningful and like right. try and do policy-related mm-hmm. work. But same issue of like, yeah. I need a visa to stay in the UK.
Yeah.
So then that just fizzled out and I went into consulting. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so fintech. And then you moved to Amazon after that.
Yeah, so I did not get my H-1B in the US.
Which is the visa.
Which is the visa, yes. which is decided by a randomized lottery. And there are, I think, I don't know, only a few, like maybe 20,000 visas that they give out every year. And there are like hundreds of thousands of people applying. So your chances of getting this are like very slim. And I think this company that I was working for, they applied several times over years and we didn't get it. So I think, you know, that decision was kind of made for me, which I didn't love, but accepted. And then after that, made the decision to move to Luxembourg and work for Amazon. And Luxembourg was their European headquarters. Mm-hmm. So I ended up staying there for 5 years, worked in a number of roles in product and product marketing. And then after about 5 years, moved back to Dubai.
Okay, I'm going to ask a probably very silly question. Mm-hmm. But how do you go from, you know, living in Dubai, someone who lives in Dubai but studied in the US, mm-hmm. how do you get a job in Europe? How does that happen?
I just applied.
You just applied. Okay.
Yeah, there were a few friends, you know, kind of scattered around the world that worked in companies like Amazon. I reached out to them for a referral.
Yeah.
I had friends that were working at other companies, reached out to them for a referral. Mm-hmm. So I had a few interviews at the time and then ended up going with Amazon.
That's amazing. How did you find the move from the US to Europe?
It was quite difficult. I think for me, I read this, I think it was a Naval quote that says, there are three important decisions you'll kind of make in your life. And these decisions will determine how easy or how difficult your life are.
Gotcha.
The first one is where you live, right? So this is super valuable because it is your day-to-day quality of life. Mm-hmm. Like how are the business opportunities in the place you are? How is the insurance? Are you stressed all the time? Are you not stressed? Is life easy? Is it not easy? The second is who you marry, right? Is it a partner that's aligned with your values, your ambition, your goals? And if they are aligned, great. If they're not aligned, not so great. Mm-hmm. And then the last is what you do, right? Which I think now is more fluid because you can acquire new skills. I mean, your career is, you know, you started off as a PhD student, moved to consulting, now you're doing something totally else. So I think that's more fluid. But the first two things, like, really decide kind of how your life is going to go. Mm-hmm. And for me, in the first phase, I think I prioritized the where you live and the what you do.
Right.
And that was my life in New York, right? Mm-hmm. I was learning new skills, becoming a product manager, living in New York, meeting lots of people, being around my friends, having a really active social life. I think for when I was moving to Lux, I definitely prioritized the what you do by having a great job at Amazon. And I think I didn't know it at the time, but I was also prioritizing the who you marry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I went into Luxembourg with a mindset of, okay, I don't know anyone in the city. Yeah. I don't know anyone in the country. I've never been to Europe before, but I'm going to move there. And I really wanted to do a lot of self-work
mm-hmm.
and kind of like get to know myself a lot better to be prepared for the ultimate, you know, like down the line when I have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like in my 20s, I didn't know who I was or what I wanted or where I was going. And when I moved to Luxembourg, I did a lot of that work.
Mm.
So that transition for me was difficult because I went from like constantly being surrounded by my friends and constantly being surrounded by people to like this tiny village where I didn't know anyone. And I started like traveling by myself and I learned how to cook and I was spending a lot of time alone.
Mm.
And that was a really difficult transition, but it was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking back now, I can say it was really great.
That's amazing. Okay. I have a few questions. So obviously I know, I know your story, but when you were moving to Amazon, you also were considering other job offers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So tell us that story.
It's a great story. Not so great at the time, but basically when I was looking at a job opportunity with Amazon in Europe, I had another interview lined up with another big tech company, which we'll keep nameless at the time. I had these two interviews basically at the same time for Amazon. I got flown out to Luxembourg and had like 8 interviews in a day.
Mm-hmm.
It went great. Very difficult process, but we got through it.
Yeah.
For the other company, I think it was 3 interviews that I had back to back. You know, 3 out of 3 of my interviewers were male.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 out of 3 made an appearance on, or made a comment on the appearance of my legs.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, I mean, they are nice, but I'd rather people didn't tell me that in an interview. Job interview. So,
like, very openly just brought it up that this...
Yeah, I mean, you walk in as a woman, it's like, you know, I think I was like 20, 24, 25 mm-hmm. at the time. It's an intimidating experience. Yeah. There are all these older dudes.
Mm-hmm.
You sit down, you're obviously, you know, I was wearing a nice, like, dress that was up till here.
Yeah.
Had my little, like, notepad, and I was taking notes, and this dude walks in. We're talking a bit about the job. I'm telling him about my... experience. I can see him
just checking you out.
My legs.
Oh my god!
And then I was just, you know, shifting positions to kind of was like, maybe I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, nice legs. Okay.
Cool.
Great.
I didn't know this still happens.
Well, I mean, this was, you know, 7
still
years ago.
Still.
But yeah, I think it happens.
How did you?
Quite a lot.
How did you handle it in the moment? I'm guessing you didn't. Address it, right?
I think I don't think I said anything.
It's hard to.
Yeah, that
yeah.
I didn't stand up for myself. I didn't walk out of the interview. I was like, oh, thanks. Let me just finish telling you about what I was telling you about. But I think that, you know, that was essentially the reason why I decided to go with Amazon mm. and not this other company, right?
Wow. I'm just baffled. I don't know how these things still happen. And I wish we could call them out.
Well, I think now we can.
Now you can.
I think it's a more open culture mm. where people are calling this out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people actually have called this company out.
Good.
Since then. Mm. And, you know, their reputation definitely took a bit of a tumble. Mm. So,
well deserved.
Yeah, deservedly mm. so. Mm. So.
Wow. Okay. Now... I mean, when you think about it, right, obviously now you know that good thing that happened because you
yeah.
went to Luxembourg and you met Alex.
Yeah.
Who you eventually married.
I did, yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
I love that because, I mean, I didn't know that you had this other job before you moved there. But have you heard of the burnt toast theory?
No.
So, Firstly, when I heard it, I was like, oh, is this when you start smelling toast and they say you're having a heart attack? But no. Do you not know that?
I thought it was like, if you smell toast, you're having a stroke.
No, no. So one I completely did not explain this well. But one symptom of you having a heart attack is you start smelling your sense of smell.
Yeah.
Kind of like it starts to imitate the smell of toast.
Oh.
So if someone tells you they're having like pain on the left side and stuff, they will ask you, can you smell burnt bread?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, but that's not what I was talking about. Sorry, I don't know. Tangent. But the burnt toast theory is that in the morning, if you burn your toast, and then you will have to spend more time making another toast, right? Which can be annoying because if you're in a hurry and stuff. But that in those few minutes that you had to remake your bread might mean that you did not get into an accident on the road that was meant for you, that you were not in that bus that crashed, or you know, or you get into the other bus where you meet someone that you would not have met.
Yeah.
So it's similar to you. If you had taken that other job, you would not have moved to Luxembourg where you met Alex.
Exactly.
So you never know, you know, when little things happen, just... It's a nice way of thinking about it, that it's either protecting you from something or bringing you towards something else.
Yeah, that's very true.
How did you meet Alex? I mean, I know both of you, but I don't even know how you guys met.
We met rock climbing in Germany. And it was the first and last time.
I was going to say, you're a rock climber?
You know, I was in this new city. I didn't have any
friends.
Trying
to make friends.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, let me go... try
all these
new
fun
things
activities.
And like put myself out there. And I went there. I met Alex. He was like, you know, spider monkey, just trying all
the
rocks. I did like, you know, like one of the beginner walls. And then there was a little cafe and then got my piece of cake.
Yeah, like, I watched you from here.
Sitting and eating. And so we didn't like immediately hit it off because obviously we were so different. Yeah. But we got to know each other a bit, and then we realized that we both worked at Amazon in Luxembourg.
Oh, wow.
And so after that, every time I would, like, enter the office, I would see him there. We'd say hello. Yeah. We'd, you know, like, say hello when we were leaving or say goodbye when we were leaving. And then there was one time when I, like, bumped into him when I was leaving work, and a few of us were meeting the next day for like a food truck festival. And I was like, oh, why don't you come with? It's like a group of six people going.
Right.
So he's like, yeah, sounds good. And then the next day I showed up at the food truck festival. I was supposed to meet with everybody at 12. And my friends there just have a habit of being
late.
A bit late. But I was like, okay, I'll go there. I'll have a drink. I'll have my food.
You'll
and
chill.
It'll be fine. But Alex showed up on time. And the two of us were the only ones that were on time, and everybody else was 4 hours late.
Full.
4 hours. This is late even
for them. Yeah.
But then we ended up just having this like impromptu
date. Yeah.
That, you know, we were alone for 4 hours eating. We were like trying all the food trucks.
Nice.
And it was like, yeah, we had a lot of fun. And then we enjoyed each other's company so much that we ended up spending just like the whole day together. Mm-hmm. We went to a museum after that. Then we went out for some drinks. And
nice.
Yeah.
So that's how it all started off.
That's how it all started. And we were just friends for a really long time.
And when did you know that he's the one you're going to marry?
I don't think I realized it.
Mm.
I don't think I realized I was in love with him until I was... way past in love with him.
I don't know. Am I?
Because we were so close as friends, and
you
he
don't
was
think
like,
about it.
Yeah, he was like my best friend in a city where there just aren't that many people. So we spent a lot of time together, and we, you know, were walking through the park like once a week, and we'd go on walks, and we'd like go volunteer at a dog shelter, and we'd do all these cute things.
Yeah.
But we do it as friends. And I think, you know, like how we started falling in love with each other without realizing was just asking each other a lot of questions.
Right.
And like that is a great way to get to know someone. But it's also if you really like the answers you're getting, you're going to fall in love.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So now going back to Amazon.
Mm.
We are just going to go on tangents all the time. That's okay. But, you know, you obviously you did conflict resolution and then you did fintech, then you did Amazon. We're going to get onto what you're doing now. But you have also pivoted a lot of times in your life.
Yeah.
And what's your approach to knowing when is the time to pivot, how to pivot, and what is the obvious next step?
I think for me, you know, like this kind of triad of like location, love, and labor is what I look at.
Ooh, location, love, and labor. I love
yeah,
that.
It is like, you know, this kind of framework of like, what do you do? Where do you live? And who are you with?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I always look at it in that lens of like, you know, the place will come first for me of like, will I get the opportunities I need there? And then it's who I'm with, which for most of my life, it wasn't anyone or it was the wrong people.
Yeah.
And I looked at like who I could become with these opportunities, right? So with Amazon, like I saw myself in Luxembourg, you know, really learning who I was, becoming really great at like a few of the skills that I wanted to excel at, which is product management, marketing, brand marketing, and then the kind of community I could build around me. And then it's the kind of what do you do, right? And is the job good? Is the company good? But I think the first kind of indicator I have of like, is it time to go is always like, when I think about what's next, does it scare me? Or does it not? If it's scary to think about like changing what you are doing and like the life you've built and like the community you've built, then for me, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? Because it means that you're getting really comfortable.
Yes.
And does it mean that you're pushing yourself enough? Or are you growing enough? Or are you challenging yourself enough? And if the thought of leaving this and doing something else is really scary, then you're probably not challenging yourself enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like right now, I think I'm challenging myself too much. You know, like all I want to do is just take a nap.
I just want to be comfortable for a bit.
I would love that. But yeah, if somebody was like, you know, if Alex came to me and was like, hey, let's move to Brazil tomorrow, I'd be like, yeah, okay, it's fine. Just go. Jump change.
Let's you know?
Go. It's not even the hardest thing I would do.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so that's your approach.
Mm-hmm.
Use that little framework of location, love, and labor.
Labor. And think about
how comfortable you are.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, what is your framework? Because you made lots of big pivots, career pivots, location pivots.
Everything pivot.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, as you said, for me, a lot of it was by necessity.
Mm.
It happened because that's just the way it was. Whether I was running from a toxic workplace or trying to get a better work-life balance, it was always these things that kind of pushed me to change. But whenever I was making big career decisions, I mean, I've read a lot and I've asked a lot of people their approach, which is why I've asked you as well. But for me, the two things that I think matter the most... The first one is thinking, I forgot who said this, but they said, think about your deathbed question.
Mm.
So if you have two options before you, option A and option B, on your deathbed, would you be regretting option A or option B? Which one would you have wanted to try out or do more of? And think that should be the one that you want to do then. Because don't think in the now, think in the future.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, what's your plan B? Is there a plan B? If this backfires in your face, what do you do?
Which is likely.
Which has happened to me, right? And I made a decision and then it completely backfired.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm an overthinker and I had overthought in details what would happen if that backfired, I knew I had options.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's less scary or that you're not worried, but it just means that I know that there are options now for me to explore. Mm-hmm. It's not a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
So just having these two thought processes help me decide on what's next.
Very nice.
But what made you decide to leave Amazon not even leave Amazon, but just leave the corporate world to now become an entrepreneur?
I think that was a tough one for me. You know, the classic overachiever, like lots of external validation from like good grades and like promotions and salary
big
bumps.
Names, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was really happy at Amazon. I think it is a wonderful company to, like, learn from the smartest people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the colleagues that I worked with are head and shoulders above, you know, people I've met. Mm. They're exceptionally bright. The work we were doing was affecting, you know, millions of people all over the world. I had the opportunity, being a 20-something-year-old, to manage a P&L of, like, hundreds of millions of euros, which is great. And, you know, it's an opportunity that I'm really, really grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I think I hit a point where I thought, okay, if I stay at this company longer, and I'd already been there for 5 years, then it's going to be harder and harder for me to leave.
Mm.
And there were a lot of things that I wanted to try to do. And there were these ideas that were spinning around in my head. And I felt like if I didn't do it at that point, then I wouldn't get the chance to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of like pushed myself off the ladder. And, you know, that was probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever made, because at Amazon they have this thing called a dive and save, where if there's like talent that's leaving the company, one of the senior leaders will have like a one-on-one conversation with them and try to convince them to stay. And for me, it was very hard to say no to like my bosses and my boss's bosses. And so I had this meeting with my VP that was scheduled, and I like wrote down a script of like,
this is why I can't
stay. I have to leave. Here's why. And, you know, he was very understanding in the meeting, but he definitely gave me the sell of like, you know, if you stay, like, here's what your mm-hmm. next 6 months could look like. You know, this is the timeline for the promotion. Mm. Like, here's the salary. And I think it was like that day that I discovered my spine, because I was like most impressed that I said, no, I'm leaving.
But what made you so convinced that this was the right decision? Because I would have swayed, by the way.
I know. I thought I would have swayed, you know?
So what made you so convinced in your mission?
I think I really wanted to bet on myself, you know? And I think I do this thing where I like write down a lot of the things that I've achieved professionally, and I've been doing it since the beginning. So I have this book of like success that I've achieved in my career, and I read it again and again so I don't forget it, right? Because we all fight with imposter syndrome. We all think that we're not good enough. We forget the kind of things that we've achieved. So I write down in my book of wins like all the things that I had done. And I think, you know, when I read it objectively, I think I want to bet on this person.
Mm.
And then, so that was like my conviction. My conviction came from like, you know, reminding myself of everything that I had done and everything that I could achieve, and like not tying myself to one company or one opportunity, and giving myself kind of space and freedom to see what I can do.
I love that, the book of wins. I feel like I need to start that.
It's so valuable. It was a recommendation from this female mentor that I had at Amazon, and she was a director, had a wonderful career, great person. And she was like, you know, every day or every week, write down like 3 wins.
Mm.
And I started doing that, and then I started like moving the big wins into another book. And like that has been so great for me to fight this like self-doubt and questions on like, can I do it?
Right. Yeah.
Especially now when I'm an entrepreneur, right? And there's zero external validation from anywhere. Then I just like make sure that I believe in myself and read these kind of historical facts.
Mm, historical facts. I love
I mean,
that.
This is data, right?
It is data.
Yeah. You have
it
to is. Give yourself data to like fight against these self-doubt.
Yeah, and I think it's also your brain works that way, mm-hmm. right? You need proof.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, oh, here's the proof. Okay, it was there. Yeah. It was not in my head. I didn't imagine that. Okay. Because you downplay your achievements as well.
100%.
And you become so used to that level of achievement. You're like, but this is nothing, right?
Yeah.
But this is like 100 times above the standard. So.
Or even that. I mean, like when you're working through your career, like somebody will tell you one day, like, oh, this is great. Like, this is amazing. Mm. Quite. Great job. And then 1 week later, you're like, did that really happen?
Maybe they just said that to be polite.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're like doubting whether it was actually a great job. So
yeah, that's a very good practice. I'm going to start doing that. Yeah. Maybe backdate some of them.
Yeah. 1991, I was born.
Great.
But okay, so what was I going to ask? I completely forgot now. Okay, yes. Yeah, so tell us about your current endeavor.
So I am in the process of building a company. Well, the company started, so I guess I built it.
It's already there.
And I started kind of experimenting in the e-commerce space in the region. So started selling some small home decor items in the UAE on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That did really well. Expanded to Saudi. That's doing really well. And now I'm creating a line of kind of sustainable, high quality bedding for the Middle East that we're trying to get at like a reasonable price point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, one, I really struggle to buy bedding in this region.
Yes. I brought mine from the UK.
Yeah, which I feel like, you know, I went to the mall when I was moving apartments and there was like, I visited the brands that I knew and I could get a duvet cover alone for 800 dirhams.
Oh my God.
And I was like, who is paying this exorbitant amount for a duvet cover? And then I asked some of my friends and they were all like, oh yeah, I go home either to the UK or US, mm-hmm. buy my sheets and then bring it back here. And I thought, okay, well, this is a really, you know, broken system.
There's a clear gap.
So let me try to fix it. And then the other thing is that I really just love this region so much. I've grown up here. The city's come so far. I mean, my family moved here in 1999 and I've seen it change, mm-hmm. you know, and like, it's really amazing that there are people from like so many different walks of life and so many different countries can come to one city and manage to find home. And so I've always been kind of inspired by this region and I want to build for this region.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when working with suppliers in India, Turkey, the Middle East and China, and we're trying to create fabrics that can survive the Middle Eastern climate, you know, that's like durable with the like high AC in the summer and the low AC in the winter and the dryness and the humidity and all of this combined. So,
oh, wow. And how is it running a one-man show, basically?
It is exhausting and exciting, and I love it, and I hate it.
Yeah.
but it's going really, really well. You know, I can, first of all, only do this because I have a wonderfully supportive husband that is funding everything else. But it's true, you know, like, I have really the privilege of us going from like a dual income household to a single income household. And he's able to support both of us while I go out and like try to make a go of this. And, you know, he's incredibly supportive and like checks me when I'm in a downward spiral or had a bad day and is there to like celebrate my wins, you know? So it's definitely me doing all of the work by myself, but it doesn't feel as lonely when you have like a great partner who's kind of working on something else, but just beside you.
Yeah, that's quite nice. But how do you manage your time?
Well, I think it's really structured, you know, and I think this comes from like being at Amazon and FinTech. Like the first job I had, we had to be at the office in New York by 7 a.m. Like you had to show up there at 7. And for me, you know, just out of college, I was like sleeping at 3 and like waking up at 11. but that instilled like a lot of discipline in me, right? And like you had to stay at the office till 7. Like you couldn't leave before. So I did 12 hours. Yeah. Mm. So I was used to putting in 12 hours a day, which then made the transition to Amazon, which was like known for how hard they work their employees.
Yeah.
It made it quite easy, right? Because
you're used to it.
Yeah, because I was putting in 12 hours a day since I was 21. So great. This is fine.
Yeah.
And then with COVID, you know, when everybody started working from home, then you're really in charge of your own time, right? Of like, what time do you wake up? Like, how do you structure your days? And I think that really taught me how to be able to like work from home without any accountability except for myself. So I structure my day through a lot of experimentation. I've arrived at, you know, the perfect schedule for me. And that is like waking up insanely early. Don't laugh.
I know. Don't you wake up at like 5 or something?
I wake up at 5:30 and then in like a few hours of work, go to the gym, you know, take a few hours in the afternoon off.
Yeah.
And then go back, work, and then kind of clock out at like 7 or 8 and go spend time with my family and my husband.
Mm-hmm. And you must sleep early as well then.
Oh, I love sleeping early.
Yeah?
I go to sleep at like 9:30 or 10 and it's the best part of my day.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So the thing is, I don't mind, I love sleeping as well. But my problem is at night, I always refuse to go to bed. You know, I feel like I'm finally free. You know, and that's what they call the whole like revenge bedtime procrastination, right? So I always push my bedtime a little bit more every day. And then I end up going to bed way too late and I wake up way too late. So any advice on how I can fix that?
I mean, I keep my phone in another room.
Do you have a physical alarm clock?
Yeah, on my watch.
Okay.
But I put my phone in like my office.
Okay.
So it's not in the same room I'm sleeping in. So I have nothing to scroll.
And you don't have a TV or
anything. And there's no TV. And I just kind of like stay in bed and I'll fall asleep really fast.
Ah, I need to do that. For me, it's not even my phone that's the issue because I don't scroll. I just put TV on.
Yeah. See, if I had a TV in like my room, I would definitely stay up late just like binge watching.
But mine is not even in my room. It's in the living room. So for me to move to my bed is the issue.
See, that's a good one. Yeah.
It's always like, I think it's discipline. It's lack of discipline. I've always lacked discipline when it came to sleep.
I think for like what helped me get started is when I wake up at like 5:30, there are these like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Flow Club, but it's this like co-working virtual club.
Okay.
And like I set up a meeting for myself at 6 a.m. with this group that's like spread out all around the world. And the point is that you just show up to these and you just like do your own work, but it's on camera and like with a group of strangers that are all over the world. So everyone is doing the same. And everybody's doing their own stuff and there's like a chat and you kind of like wake up, you check in, you're like, for the next hour, I'm going to work on X, Y, Z.
So it's like accountability.
Yeah. Okay. And I think when I was like starting to develop this new habit, I like booked myself 6 a.m. sessions like every day. And I would show up to that. So it'd be like somebody is waiting for me to show up.
Yeah. Okay, I might try that.
It's really good.
I might just join you. You might be my accountability buddy for waking up early. We'll
go on Google Meets and be like, wake up.
I asked my mom at what time to like wake me up. So she would call me and I'd be like, how dare you call me? And I would be so offended that I was like, why did you listen? It was just like, hang up.
Yeah, it can be somebody that you're like too close with. Just leave me alone.
Yeah, but I think if I sleep enough, I will wake up. It's just a question of right now.
Yeah,
it's too early.
Getting to bed.
Yeah, so I need to go to bed.
But I think, you know, the other thing is like make your bedroom like so inviting, which is like,
to bed.
Yeah, for us, like I keep it super cold. I'm using my own sheet samples, which are very soft. It's like, you know, it feels like a spa and I don't let myself go in there during the day.
So you're waiting
to go. So it's like waiting to like go and just relax and be zen and get into bed and like make it such an inviting space that you're just like, oh, I can't wait to get into bed.
No, for sure, for sure. And I feel like one of those annoying boys as well now. You know, the teenage boys who don't make up their bed? That's me. I wake up, I'm always late.
Oh, yeah.
Then I don't make my bed. This has started very recently, but I need to do it.
Yeah.
Because then, it's, as you said, it's like the sacred place where you just go at night to sleep. And I love reading as well before going to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
What book are you reading right now?
I just ordered a new one.
Which is?
I think it's called Obasan. which is about the Japanese internment during World War II in Canada.
Talk about light reading before bed.
Well, it was actually because Alex's half Japanese, and we were having a conversation about like cultural and racial identity and how does that translate if we have a kid. And I think I don't quite understand the kind of half Japanese, half Canadian experience that he went through.
Mm.
So it's like,
even I don't.
Yeah. Well, he recommended this book as a way for me to understand
and then you can,
it better.
You can teach me about it.
Yeah. After.
But I'm sure that won't be light reading though.
No, but you know, I think we're doing a better job of like trying to understand each other's cultural heritage. Like he's listening to podcasts about the British rule in
India.
In India, there's a great podcast called Empire, which I'm also working through. It's phenomenal.
So, what do they address on the podcast?
It talks about how the British came to India, like what circumstances made it, you know, like how did they take over the country?
So the actual history of it all.
Yeah.
Okay.
How did they rule the country, and then how did they leave?
Mm.
Right. Which, I think. I mean, I didn't even know this, but India, before the British rule, was responsible for somewhere around like 25% to 30% of all global trade in the entire world.
Yeah.
Wild.
Right.
Yeah.
And also before the whole, you know, colonialism, Africa had the most riches.
Yeah.
And now it's the poorest continent. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But even, you know, Mauritius was also under British
colony.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So Mauritius was a volcanic island.
Okay.
So it didn't have indigenous people.
Mm.
Then it was discovered by the Dutch first.
Okay.
They came and ate all of the dodos.
Okay.
You know, you know the dodo?
Yeah.
So it only existed in Mauritius.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It went extinct. And now there's this company in the US that are trying to bring them back.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah. So the Dutch came, but then they left because they couldn't handle the tropical weather.
Oh.
Yeah, so they left. And then we became a British colony, then a French colony, then back to British colony. And then we became independent from them in 1968.
Oh, 68.
Yeah.
Wow.
So very recently.
Very recent.
Very, very recently. And we learn a lot about colonization in school, which I think is really great because we understand where we come from, which is why all of us, like some of us, our ancestors are slaves from Africa. My ancestors are indentured laborers brought from India.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you have all of these people who were brought from different places because when slavery was abolished, they needed more people to work. So then they went to India and got these indentured laborers who were kids. Oh. My ancestor came at 7.
Oh,
with
my
no
gosh.
Name. Yeah. So all of that is like super interesting to kind of like understand your history and where you come from. And even our language, Creole, came out from all of these people having to interact with each other, but not having a common language.
Wow.
So it's super interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But even recently, I found this out, probably way too late for my age. But, you know, we became independent from the British colony, but they took one island from us.
Oh, really?
So Mauritius, we it's not like Seychelles. It's like one big island, and then we own very small ones.
Right.
And one of them, called Chagos, there were people there. And the British said, give us that island so that we can build a fort there to defend ourselves in the Indian Ocean because the French owned an island next door.
Oh.
And they were like, cool. So a boat just went there, just grabbed all of these people, put them on the boat. They just left their home without understanding what's happening. And they were brought to Mauritius.
Oh, my gosh.
Since that year, they're still in Mauritius like refugees. They don't. Wow. They are not considered Mauritian. So they're still there. And the UN has said that the UK should give back that island.
Yeah.
But no, the UK is refusing to give back that island. Can you imagine? These people are still stranded, like not being able, and their houses are still there.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. I'm sorry. I went on a massive tangent there.
I mean, I think you're right. I feel like I'm trying to like find more voices on like the effects of colonization, right? Because I feel like I don't even understand like the gravity
I don't think we do.
Of what was taken. I mean, I was watching this video the other day, and this is not verified, but but in the video they were talking about how scholars estimate that the kind of amount of resources and money that was extracted from India under British rule was somewhere around like $43 trillion.
Not surprised, right?
That blows my mind.
Imagine how rich that country would have been now.
And there was, because of the British policies, there were so many deaths due to famine in India, and the famine-related deaths were 35 million people. Like, that just kind of took my breath away. I mean, I want to research it more and, verify all of that, but...
But even the partition, right? Mm-hmm. That came from the British rule.
Arbitrarily drawing a line.
Yeah. And then till date, people are still fighting over that boundary now. Yeah. And it just divided a whole country. Mm-hmm. It's crazy for me, even when the Queen died and the Kohinoor was there, and everyone was like, well, are they going to give back the Kohinoor?
Oh, gosh.
It's crazy when you think about history. And it's easy to think, well, this was back in the day.
Yeah.
So the values were different. But when you think, but it's still the same today.
Yeah, and was it back in the day? I mean, you're telling me Mauritius was independent in 1968?
Yeah.
That's not that far. Younger than my mom.
Exactly. We are.
You know?
So it's crazy. And... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how we got there, but
I don't know either.
But it's a very interesting conversation. And I think the most interesting part of that conversation is the internalized colonization that we have.
Yeah.
Us people who were colonized.
Yeah.
And now we still have some remnants. And I see it in myself sometimes when you have some remnants of that colonization impact.
100%.
Right? And you internalize the racism, you internalize everything. And even now with, people being obsessed with fairer skin.
Yeah, skin tone.
Skin tone and even your accent, the way you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and we hate our own people.
I know.
So it's just very interesting. But yeah, good read.
Yeah.
I mean, Alex will also have a lot to learn on that front.
Yeah.
He can teach us.
So. Yeah. Yeah. He, because he's had an interesting experience, right? He has a British passport because his dad is British.
Okay.
And Canadian because he was born there and grew up there. And doesn't have a Japanese passport, but his mom is Japanese and then moved to Canada. And we have a Luxembourg passport now because we lived there. And then OCI, right, because of the connection. And now we have permanent residency in the UAE. So I don't know if we have kids, what would they even say?
It has to be a new one. Add to the collection.
Just pick a country and say you're from it.
Add to the collection, But it will be very interesting because you have Indian roots. Mm-hmm. He has Japanese, Canadian,
British,
and you also have Dubai roots.
Yeah.
So all of this, it will be very interesting. How do you see navigating all of that as a kid?
I don't know. The first part is definitely just having these conversations, right? I feel like conversations about culture and identity when I was young didn't really exist.
Yeah, they didn't happen.
So I think just having more of this conversation, but I think my kid will have a very different kind of grapple with this issue than I did. And it would be hard for me to understand that because my kind of roots are very much Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an Indian expat in Dubai. And after that, when I got older, I kind of traveled the world more. And, I spent 6 years in the US and 5 years in Europe. But I still feel very Indian, India is home, Dubai is home. Now I guess Luxembourg is home. Mm. But I feel like I've been adding these layers as I move through life.
Yeah.
And so they just kind of stack on one on top of the other. But my kid will have all of this kind of mixed together right from day one.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what is a good way to deal with that yet, but we'll figure it out.
But it'll be interesting. And I think Dubai is incredible in that sense, right? Because there's so many mixes around and there's no majority per se.
Yeah.
Everyone is from a different place. And I think it's easier to not feel like you're the odd one out.
Yeah. And you're in a city of immigrants, yeah. really, right?
Yeah.
Like everybody here has come from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes it in itself just slightly easier.
Yeah, for sure. And is Dubai, you think, a forever home for you now?
I don't know. I think, you know, in my little triad of location, labor, and love,
yeah.
I think where I am right now optimizes for all three.
Yeah.
You know, like I have the right partner. I'm loving what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm learning a lot. And Dubai is like a great place for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think as things move on, like that changes.
No, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
What about you?
Good question. I mean, for me, definitely the triad is not being checked. But for now, I definitely love Dubai. And I mean, when I moved with the job as a consultant,
yeah.
I still decided to stay even though I didn't have a good experience because of my job.
Right.
So then I left the job and I stayed. And then I had the real experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, no, I like it. And especially since, you know, I met all of you guys from the Dubai group as well. It's just really nice to be around people who are similar to you,
yeah.
passionate about something,
building,
working on something,
yeah.
building, yeah, and also building and failing, mm-hmm. and then restarting mm-hmm. again, which is really good to see because I don't think we talk about failing enough.
Yeah,
you always see just like, oh, someone just accumulating yeah. successes, and you're like, well, I'm really far behind.
Yeah,
I hired an intern recently.
Oh.
Yeah, and she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking. She was building this deck for me
mm-hmm.
because I have this talk to give and it's about my journey. And then she was like, wow, you're so lucky. Like your journey kind of like meshed together really well. And I was like, oh, that's what she's seeing from it. And I was like, no, sit down. I'm going to tell you the story behind. And I was like, this is what happened. And you know, and she was like, oh my God, like I had no idea. She was mm-hmm. like, on the outside, it just looks like it just worked out for you really well.
Yeah.
And then she even told me, she was like, when you're speaking to the students, make sure that, you know, if you're comfortable to tell them that this was not easy. And
right.
like, at every step of the way, there was either necessity that pushed
mm-hmm.
you one
mm-hmm.
place or you struggled.
Yeah.
Because that makes it so much more relatable
yeah.
to people. And I realized that we don't talk about feeling. Enough,
no.
right?
Yeah, there is always. I mean, this is like everybody has like a fear of
yeah.
failure.
But everybody right? fails.
Yeah.
At something.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, failure teaches you so much more than any success.
You wouldn't
success
be
could.
Where you are
no.
without it.
What is the biggest failure for you so far?
Like today or?
<The past weeks.
laughs> I mean, I think, you know, like every failure gets you, like it pushes you in another direction,
yes.
which ends up being the right direction,
yes.
right? So it's hard to look and be like, oh, this is a failure.
Yeah, more like a challenge. What was the biggest challenge you
dealt with? I mean, I think, look, in this like business
yes.
that I'm doing, like there's failure every day,
yeah.
right? You have to fail at like 9 things and then the 10th thing will work.
Yes.
And there's so many. I mean, I could create a whole new book on my failure book, but like, you know, choosing kind of the products and like what you think will sell well
mm-hmm.
doesn't sell, then you're stuck with inventory. You start working with a design agency.
Mm-hmm.
They turn out to be the worst design agency you could have
yeah.
picked. And like, you've just like lost money. How you enter the market, like, you know, like
you try something, it doesn't work.
It's
yeah.
like the whole process is just like fail, so you can succeed.
Right. And how do you approach every time when something doesn't work out or like it's a bit of a challenge?
I think I used to really internalize these failures and be like, okay, well, this thing went wrong,
mm-hmm.
so I am wrong, ergo, I'm a bad person
right.
or like a shitty person.
I'm not good
like,
enough.
I
yeah.
messed up,
yeah.
you know? And I think it took a lot of like changing my internal narrative to like get over that,
mm.
right? Because I would force myself every time something went wrong and I would think of myself like, oh, I really, really messed up. I would like force myself to be like, okay, I messed up. So the next time when there's a bigger order or I'm working with a more like a bigger supplier and there's a lot more money on the line, I won't mess up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Here's everything that I learned so that next time it's going to go better. It won't go perfect because life is not like that, mm-hmm. but it'll go better.
So you take your lessons basically from this.
And I think it's just how you talk to yourself about it.
Right? It is. It's the conversation that's going on internally.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you have gone through lots of pivots, which I'm sure come with its own set of challenges, mm-hmm. right? Like, how have you found that your inner narrative has kind of helped you through that?
Oh, gosh. It's the same as you. Honestly, initially,
yeah.
it was a lot of like, oh, you're so stupid. People told you not to do this, you know, and you're like, you knew that you did not have it in you. Mm-hmm. You should not have done this. But then I realized that I was really adopting a victim mentality mm-hmm. a lot of times.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine made me realize this because I said, this happened when I had my car accident.
Mm.
And that day was the first time in my whole life that I had my tires pressure done.
Okay.
And I was so gassed. Do you get the joke? And I was like, yeah, let me, I was very happy. I leave the petrol station to uh-huh. drive into work. Literally 3 minutes later, my four tires are out of the car.
Oh my
right?
gosh.
Because I crashed yeah, properly. Yeah. And then afterwards, I was telling my friend, I was like, I don't understand why this happened to me. On my drive, I was thinking, I'm so grateful for everything that is happening right now. Life is good. So I was showing gratitude, right? And then this happened to me. And he was like, why do you say this happened to you? Like, why do you think that the universe is out to get you? Like,
yeah.
it's not about you. Like, things happened, mm-hmm. full stop, not to you. And I was like, that's true. I have this victim mentality. I do. I keep thinking, oh, why me? Like, why did I do this? Why did this happen to me? Then now I've changed that. And I've also noticed that, okay, even if it's not true that, you know, that things are happening to me, let's yeah. say, but me thinking that way just doesn't help me mm-hmm. move further mm-hmm. or deal with it better. But if you have this mentality of, okay, this happened, now what?
Yeah.
Let's see what's the next step. How yeah. do we fix this? What do we learn from this? Or if, you know, you've lost something and you can't learn anything from it, fine, you move on. This was not meant to be. And it's just that when I've changed that way of thinking
mm-hmm.
and now I catch myself as well, you know, and you're like, nope, this does not happen to me. This just happened. And now I feel a lot better about it.
Yeah.
And you dwell less longer
yeah.
on the things that happened. So yeah, it's still a learning in progress. Mm-hmm. Like when things didn't work out, for example, recently with jobs and stuff. And I was like, okay, this happened. Now what? Let me focus all of that energy on focusing on yeah. finding something else rather than feeling sorry for myself. And it's not easy, and it's not like I'm there yet,
no.
but this is what I'm trying to do.
And it makes a big difference.
It does,
right?
It does. But while we're talking about this, it reminded me that we watched Barbie together recently.
Yes. Great movie.
Which we loved. Unfortunately, we were separated by many people in between us.
Don't worry, but I could hear you.
Okay, I laugh very loudly. I know. But you loved it as well, right?
Yeah, great
I loved
movie.
It too.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's that whole monologue of America
yeah.
in it. What did you think of it?
This is the last bit where they talk about how
what it's like being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where she goes on and yeah. on about it.
Yeah.
What did you think about it?
I really liked it, mm-hmm. first of all. You know, like it's nice to I feel like this is stuff that every woman does grapple with, right? Like, especially when I was going through my job and climbing the corporate ladder, it's always like, you know, you have to be firm but not bossy.
Yeah.
And you have to be smiling while you're delivering feedback
yeah.
and just like always kind of look cheerful and not too grumpy because like I have gotten feedback from people I worked with that says, you know, you should really smile more. And like, why are you so quiet? And I was like, I just led a meeting. How could I be quiet? But they're like, oh, just be assertive.
Be assertive. You know? Don't be too soft.
Yeah. And then yeah. if I'm too assertive, then like the feedback is, oh, she's really bossy.
People don't like working with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it was relatable, right?
It was relatable and you feel really like seen, right? When that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is important to like have in a movie and like let women kind of share this collective experience. But I don't think I will, that won't be my inner narrative.
No.
You know, because I'll get stuck in this, like, oh, agreed, it's too hard to be a woman. Yeah. I'm just going to take a nap. Mm-hmm. You know? So, like, I think it's great, and I loved the movie, and I loved how they talk about the experience of being a woman and, like, how complicated it is, mm-hmm, and how difficult it is to navigate. And I'll leave it on the screen.
Yeah. I love that. You know, honestly, I really enjoyed it as well. And I thought that that was very powerful. And mm-hmm, as you said, it's so important for it to be in a blockbuster movie, yeah, like this, right? And what I found was really interesting is that online now, you're seeing a lot of people pouring their heart out, being like, this made me tear up. Mm-hmm. This was speaking like my own experiences. Yeah. But then some people are also like picking at it, being like, this is so like basic, it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. It's missing out on all the nuances of feminism, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this is so interesting and mm-hmm, so ironic,
yeah,
right? That this speech about how contradictory it is for a woman to be able to do everything right,
yeah,
is literally being picked apart for not being, yeah, everything perfect.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's exactly the point, mm-hmm, right? That you cannot do anything right. Yes, sure, it doesn't go into the nuances of, yeah, everything that all women around the world face.
It can't.
But it can in, yeah, a movie. And also, I'm like, if you think about the teenagers and the Barbie dolls that she was addressing, mm-hmm, in that movie, they are coming to terms with how life as a woman can be more difficult than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, it made complete sense.
Yeah.
Right. And all of us had something out of it that we related with. And I think that's beautiful to, yeah, be able to put that on the screen right there and feel like, you know, there is, it's not just us. Yeah. It's everybody. And yeah, yes, you're right. We don't take it with us and carry it as a burden,
mm-hmm,
but it's just good to be seen like that.
Yeah. It is nice to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, when someone's talking about, like, I don't know, there's all these random TikTok videos and it's like, oh, it's my time of the month and I really hate going to, yeah, work, you know? And I just like, I like seeing that because,
exactly,
it is hard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm still going to go to work, but it's hard.
Amazing. Okay. One final question to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
What does success mean to you now?
Oof. It's a good one.
Yeah.
You will answer also, right?
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. I think for me, what success has meant has changed a lot over time. And I think at this age and where I am in my life, I think success means living with integrity. And that means showing up as like my true self and putting in all of my effort in the places that I want to put it in and not anywhere else. And for me currently, that means I'm putting 100% into my business and like betting on myself. It means I'm putting 100% into my relationship and my family and being like a good partner and a good daughter and like what that means to me. And then I think the last thing is like, you know, showing up and building a community of people around me and giving back when I can and like lifting other people up. So integrity.
Love that. Well, mine is different.
Okay.
But for me, it has the same factors. You know, when, mm-hmm, I was thinking about this, I thought the important aspects of my life are my relationships,
mm-hmm,
me living to my full potential.
Yep.
And building a community, right? Three very similar things. But for me, what will help me do these three things is having freedom of my time.
Mm,
so I don't want anyone to own my time.
Yeah.
I don't want, that means not having a job, mm-hmm, not having an employer, and deciding what to do with my own time myself,
yeah,
that will feed into these three things, whether, yeah, it is spending quality time with the people I love, mm-hmm, or working on my passion, or building a community and spending time with that community. And because for me, I've had such struggles where I felt like my time was not my own.
Yep.
So now it's my priority.
Nice. Yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Wow.
There we go. Well, great note to end this on. Thank you for being here, Shweta.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we'll see you in the next one.
See ya.
Bye.